Welcome to Pop Culture Podcast. My name is Spencer, and for those of you who are new or just don't know, this podcast is basically just an audio version of my videos over on YouTube, which you can find if you go over to YouTube and type in the search bar at The Film Punch. If for whatever reason you can't find me over there, you can also go over to my Instagram, which is also at The Film Punch, and the link in the bio should take you where you need to go. Not only can you find the video version of what I do over here over on the YouTube channel, but you can also get it earlier. So I highly recommend going over there and subscribing if you wouldn't mind. I'd very much appreciate it. As for this episode today, I only have one review for you, and that is for 2022's Babylon. This will be the last movie that I review for 2022 in the year of 2022. So I thought it deserved being its own episode. But yeah, let's not waste any time. Let's thank the sponsors and get into the review. This episode is sponsored by Audible, which, if you don't know, has a great selection of audiobooks, originals, and podcasts. And right now, if you go to www.audibletrial.com/popculturepodcast, you can get a free 30-day trial of Audible Plus, which lets you listen to a selection of audiobooks, originals, sleep tracks, meditation programs, and podcasts. Or you can get a free 30-day trial of Audible Premium Plus, which gives you all of that from Audible Plus, as well as one free title per month from an extended selection of bestsellers and new releases, and you own those, so that's awesome. So if you want to go get that 30-day free trial of Audible, that website is www.audibletrial.com/popculturepodcast. Now on with the show.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
All right, so 2022's Babylon is written and directed by Damien Chazelle, who has written and directed two of my favorite movies of all time, 2014's Whiplash, which you can find on the channel, literally the review right before this one, and La La Land. And funny enough, I was doing that review for Whiplash, I mentioned the movie La La Land because both movies have jazz in it, and I was saying how, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of jazz before, but with movies like Whiplash, La La Land, and Soul, it's a type of music that I've grown more accustomed to. And yeah, I was saying all that, not even realizing that he wrote and directed La La Land as well. So yes, Damien Chazelle has written and directed two of my favorite movies of all time. And along with that, I didn't realize that he directed this film as well. So I thought, hey, that'll be perfect. Just, you know, what a coincidence. Didn't realize it was written and directed by him. Let me go check this out today. And was it worth watching? Was it worth being the last movie that I will review for 2022, by the way? I will get to that in a sec, but I do want to mention the cast here, which is Diego Calva as Mandy Torres. He is the main character of the film, or at least in my opinion, you know, basically have like three main characters here. But he, I would say, is like the one you start with, and I think the main character overall, the one you start with, the one you end with. So yeah, Diego Calva as Mandy Torres, which is an actor I'm not familiar with from anything, but after this film, I'm looking forward to seeing him in more potentially. We got Margot Robbie as Nellie LeRoy, and she's an aspiring actress on the rise. Manny Torres, his character, you know, how would I describe his character? He's somebody who really wants to get into the movie industry, but just, like, hasn't had his break yet, and this movie is kind of like him getting his break and, like, you know, seeing how that goes over time, really. I don't want to get too specific with anything here, but... Nellie LeRoy's character, played by Margot Robbie. That's a hard last name to say. Her character, you know, aspiring actress, very, very crazy woman, the wild child, as they call her. And when it comes to Margot Robbie in this movie, and, you know, I'm already getting into the meat and potatoes of this review, but her character, like in The Wolf of Wall Street, I would say is very sexualized. I'm going to say that right off the bat. And I would say she's even more sexualized in this movie than Wolf of Wall Street. But at the same time, they do somewhat interesting things with their character to try to, like, excuse some of that. But it doesn't necessarily make some of it better. That's all I'll say right now, really. Brad Pitt is also in the cast as Jack Conrad. You know, he's a famous movie actor who, with the introduction of talking movies, or talkies, I guess they called them, is starting to kind of see a decline because he was more popular in the silent film territory, which, you know, the interesting thing about this film for me personally is it's a movie about filmmaking, it's a movie about actors, it's a movie about movies, essentially. And the interesting thing about it, the thing that hasn't been done in other movies like this, is that it shows that transition period between the silent films and the talkies, as they called them, you know, films with, you know, audio with it. And yeah, I really liked seeing the kind of historical aspects to this movie. I'm a big kind of history buff when it comes to things like this, when it comes to Hollywood, when it comes to movies, when it comes to all sorts of different things. But this is like my kind of history right here, is the history of Hollywood. I find very fascinating. There's, you know, a show on Netflix I watched called Hollywood, which people didn't seem to care for too much, but I personally liked. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is another one that I very much liked. So, you know, that type of history I find very interesting. Mank is another one I should mention. But yeah, let's keep going with the cast here. We have Jean Smart as Eleanor St. John. We have Hovind Adepo as Sidney Palmer. Lee Jun Lee as Lady Fei Zhu. Lucas Haas as George Munn. We got Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers as Bob Levine. And you might be thinking, Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers? He's actually acted before. one movie in particular that I can think of off the top of my head is Baby Driver. He was in that film. I know he's been in more, but I just can't think of anything else off the top of my head. But yeah, he has done acting before, for those of you who don't know. Olivia Wilde is in this movie for like maybe not even 30 seconds tops as Ina Conrad, one of the many wives of Jack Conrad in this movie. Who else do we have here? Eric Roberts as Robert Roy, the father to Nellie LeRoy. We have Rory Scovel as the Count. You know, some of these actors you probably don't recognize, but their characters are kind of big players in the film. So let me mention the big players that you probably do know. You know, we got Samara Weaving as Constance Moore, which a lot of people say Samara Weaving and Margot Robbie look a lot alike. I would say they definitely do. And I don't know if they've been in a film together before, but it's just kind of cool to see them going back and forth in this movie with, you know, people saying that they look like they could be sisters. But yeah, we also have Jeff Garlin in here as Don Wallach. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Catherine Waterston as Estelle, another one of the wives of Jack Conrad. We got Chloe Fineman. I believe she's a SNL actress, comedian, I'm pretty sure. As Marion Davies, small role there. But the two big ones I want to mention here, and I'll say this right now, a bit of a spoiler, but they really don't come in until the very end, is Tobey Maguire as James McKay and Ethan Suplee as Wilson. Ethan Suplee is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's a comedian, and I have seen him in another 2022 film called Dog, which I would recommend. It has Channing Tatum in it. Those types of movies with dogs usually get to me, but he was pretty good in that. But yeah, really all-star cast in here. I think everybody involved does a really good job in terms of acting, and they get a lot of really clever writing. This movie is hilarious in a lot of aspects, but also at times some of the jokes do not land. They do a lot of really gross humor with like shit and piss and throw up and stuff like that. And if that's not for you, you know, you're not gonna like a lot about this movie because it happens a lot. And for me personally, like, I don't have a complete issue with it when they're doing it in a smart way, because there's one particular like kind of fart scene that they do. It's like a fart scene in a rated R movie like this that's like a hard R, because like, trust me, there's a lot of like drug use, language, nudity, a lot of nudity, trust me. But like a fart joke, really, that seems so childish. But no, they do something really clever with that fart joke that some people might roll their eyes at, but for me personally, I was like, oh, that's really clever writing. I like the way they did that. That's hilarious. It works within the confines of this scene. But when they do it in other scenes, it feels just like they're doing it for shock value. And a lot of this movie really does just feel like shock value. You know, they go crazy with a lot of these like parties, especially. You see a lot of those in the trailers. You got a lot of crazy shit going on. You know, if there's any kids watching this review, click off right now. But there's a lot of like fucking... This movie at times is just like a straight up porno, or like a softcore porn at the very least. But there's times, especially in the beginning, where you're just seeing people full on fucking, and it's just people pissing on each other. It's stuff like that really takes this movie down a lot of notches for me, because it doesn't necessarily, like, because you can use it sparingly. And for the most part, with some of the, like, sex elements of it, they do use it sparingly. But when you just go so big like that, where it's just like a giant orgy on screen, I'm probably gonna have to age restrict this video, aren't I? Yes, I'm probably gonna have to age restrict this video. Oh well, last review of the year, and I have to age restrict it. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sex in here for sure. It looks like a giant orgy just in the beginning scene. Does it have a really strong beginning? Not necessarily. I would say the strongest part of this movie is actually the middle act. The middle act is where it really had me, when they're actually making movies. There's one scene in particular where they're like filming a battle scene in a movie. One of the best scenes in this entire movie. Another scene that I think is one of the best in the movie involves Margot Robbie's character, where she's acting for the first time and she's showing how great she can be. And the lady, the director, is like, hey, can you just do like a little amount of tears rather than a big amount of tears? She's like, one tear or two. And I'm just, that's one of those lines in here that I thought was just extremely clever and that I really loved, especially coming from Margot Robbie. I thought that was great. But yeah, Brad Pitt's character in here, he's Brad Pitt. He has so much charisma. He's hilarious in this movie. Honestly, one of the best parts of this movie to me personally. Do I love what they do with this character towards the end? Not really. Is he the strongest character? No. I would say the two really main characters of this movie are Diego Calva and Margot Robbie. Brad Pitt kind of being a little more of a side character. That being said, there are a lot of side characters in this movie. Most of these people, like Jovan or Hovind Adepo as Sidney Palmer, Jean Smart as Eleanor St. John, Lynn Jun Lee as Lady Fei Zhu. Like, all these characters here are like secondary characters of their own. They have like their own kind of side plot that they go with. And sure, they don't really like stick with it for too long, but at the same time, it just feels like, who are we focusing on here? It makes it hard to really know, because I'll say this right now, I probably should have said this toward the beginning, but with a movie like this, I think movies like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Mank actually did what this movie is trying to achieve, in some aspects did it better. But at the same time, this movie is trying to achieve some different aspects. Basically, from what I kind of gathered from it, it's trying to expose the way that Hollywood was, especially back in this time, the late 20s to early 30s, is when this kind of time frame of the movie it takes place. It's trying to expose just how crazy it was at the time, but at the same time, this movie is just like a downright comedy for most of it, so it's hard to take any of like the more serious aspects seriously. Kind of a complaint that a lot of people had with Thor: Love and Thunder, I think, is another complaint people could have with this one, is that when they do have those more serious moments, you're still kind of coming off the high of just the craziness of what came before and the comedy of before, that it's hard to take anything that they're trying to take seriously for you to take it seriously. But yeah, there's a lot of creative ideas in here. I love a lot with what they do with the editing and the cinematography. There's times where they're filming movies and you kind of like actually get to see the movie being made, like from the actual camera that they're shooting on and stuff like that. I love stuff like that. I love seeing them use that to their advantage, using the technology at the time to their advantage, using, the way people acted back in the time to their advantage to really set you in that tone, to set you in that era, I guess you could say. But that is another issue that this movie kind of has, is really making you believe you're in this era, because they're doing things actively in this movie that don't feel like things people in the late 20s to early 30s would do, acting in ways that you feel like people in the late 20s to early 30s wouldn't act. You see people acting more the way they would act maybe today, or at least like in the 80s to 90s when people are like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But at the time, that I feel like personally, that really wasn't a thing that was going on. I could be wrong. I mean, you had the whole, prohibition thing and all that, and people were going crazy at that time. But, when it comes to the party scenes and like the way people are acting, especially, I think movies like The Great Gatsby really, that movie isn't fantastic. I don't love the direction on that movie. But I think a movie like that kind of sets you in this time period better than this movie does personally. I never really fully felt like I was in the 20s or, late 20s to early 30s. I just kind of felt like I was watching people pretending to be in that time frame. Yeah, for the most part, I think the reason to watch this movie is the performances. I think everybody brings their A game. Lots of really A-list actors in here that you're going to have a lot of fun watching. Brad Pitt, again, you know, a lot of charisma with him. So there's a lot of scenes that he gets that are just going to have you laughing. A lot in general that this movie is just going to have you laughing at. It's a fun time for the most part, but especially once you get into the third act, they already went so crazy with just the first act that they feel like they need to go even crazier with the third act. And it gets to a point where it almost feels like a horror movie even. And I don't know, I just don't like the direction they went with in that final act. There's things that the characters do that just don't make sense for a character in general, let alone like the characters they're trying to play. And I don't know. I get it. They were trying to be artistic. Damien Chazelle, he was trying to be artistic with some of this stuff, but it didn't completely work for me in the end. I mean, there's a lot that I do like about this movie. One thing in particular is the music. I think they use a lot of jazz music in here because, you know, again, late 20s, early 30s, that was a very popular type of music at the time. And the way they use that music in here, it amplifies scenes that are intense and crazy and kind of almost gives you anxiety just because of how intense the music is going along with how intense the scene is. You know, just going into these parties, it really kind of sets you in the shoes of the characters of how they must feel in this extravagant party full of all these extravagant people doing all sorts of crazy things and just being so overwhelmed by everything around you. It really does kind of set you in that tone. And there's a lot of things I will commend this movie for. There's a lot of things that it does right. But at the same time, there's a lot of things that it does wrong. I think there's more things that they do wrong than right. But it's a really thin line there. There were times where I loved this movie. There were times where I hated it. So for that reason, with good conscience, I don't think I can give this a standard ticket. I'm going to have to give it a discounted ticket. This is worth watching if you watch it on a discounted price. Would I say you have to rush to the theaters to watch this, though? No. It's a 3-hour movie. I probably should have mentioned that before, but it's a very long movie. Really doesn't need to be. There's a lot that they probably could have cut out, but at the end of the day, not the worst movie I've watched of 2022, but definitely by far not the best. It could have been a lot better than it was. I think if they probably, you know, took the runtime down a little bit and saved some of the craziness for the final act, maybe it would have been a little bit better. But yeah, it's just personally how I feel about 2022's Babylon. I know not a super long review, not as in-depth as it could be, but, you know, I wanted to get one last review in before the new year and before my top 10 list, which, by the way, tomorrow I will be posting my top 10 favorite movies of 2022 list, and the day after, the 31st, I will be posting my top 10 least favorite movies of 2022, and then we'll be into the new year. Most likely, I'll probably take a little bit of a break. I don't know. I'm trying to think, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know how long of a break I'll take, but I mean, most likely I'll end up being back by maybe next Thursday tops. But yeah, that's all I got for you. Have you seen 2022's Babylon? What did you think? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Are you in the middle? I'm very much in the middle, leaning a little more towards not liking it, but extremely in the middle. Would this end up on my top 10 worst of the year, or at least the dishonorable mentions? I think it has to at least make the dishonorable mentions, which, by the way, you know, when it comes down to that list, I'll, you know, go, it goes from 10 to 1, and before I do my top 3, I'll mention honorable mentions, dishonorable mentions for the favorite, least favorite, basically movies that didn't quite make the list, but I thought should be mentioned. This movie, I think I would include in that dishonorable mentions category. But I did already record that top 10 least favorite movies of 2022 video, so that's why it's not going to be mentioned there. But would it be in that dishonorable mentions? Maybe less dishonorable and more just like kind of a mentioning that, hey, it's a little more bad than good, but there's good elements to it. So have you not seen this movie? Are you planning on watching it anytime soon? Why or why not? Probably not after my review. And after what everybody else has been saying about the movie with the limited reviews that are out there for this film. But yeah, that's all I got for you guys today. Leave a like on the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you never miss an upload. And I will see you in the next one. Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at The Film Punch. You can also find my other Instagram page at The Film Sensei. I don't post there a whole lot, but you can also follow me there if you want. But yeah, not only can you find the video version of what I just talked about today over on my YouTube channel, but you can also get it earlier over there. So again, highly recommend going over there and subscribing. Didn't say this in the beginning, but the podcast will be ending fairly soon at episode 200. So all the content will be over on the YouTube channel going forward. So yeah, if you haven't already went over there and subscribed, I highly recommend doing so. But yeah, this is usually the point of the episode where I ramble about whatever I want to talk about. And for today, I kind of just want to talk about the end of the year and talk about the podcast ending very soon. I still haven't prepared anything for that 200th episode. Probably going to start very soon here, pretty much right after I finish doing my top 10 list for the end of the year is when I'll start working on that final episode and start compiling stuff. It's going to be a long one. I'm going to end out with a bang. So yeah, it's going to be a good one for sure. As for the year ending, I watched just shy of 90 movies, probably like 88 to 89 movies, just of 2022 releases alone, not including the movies that I went back and watched from other years. So well over 100 movies watched this year, which is absolutely insane, just to put it in that perspective. But yeah, it's been a pretty good year for movies. I think next year will be even better. But yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and end the episode here. Thank you all for listening once again. I will see you in the next one.